Penguin Random House Audio presents Mother, Daughter, Traitor, Spy by Susan Elia McNeil. Read for you by Carolyn Hewitt. To the real Los Angeles spies and spymasters of the 1930s and 40s. We Americans are characters in this living book of democracy. But we are also its author. It falls upon us now to say whether the chapters that are to come will tell a story of retreat or a story of continued advance. President Franklin D. Roosevelt's final campaign speech of 1940. Inspired by real people and true events. Violet and Veronica Grace are fictional. However, they're inspired by two very real people, Grace and Sylvia Comfort, a mother and daughter who both became spies in 1940 and infiltrated various isolationist and Nazi organizations in Los Angeles. Little is known about their personal lives, save for the basic facts. Records of the undercover work they did to fight American Nazis in the early 1940s in Los Angeles are held at the University Library at California State University, Northridge. Ari Lewis is also a fictional character. Like Veronica and Vi, he's also inspired by a real person, Leon L. Lewis, an American attorney and World War I veteran who became the first national secretary of the Anti-Defamation League, a national director of B'nai B'rith, and founder and first executive director of the Community Relations Committee of the Jewish Federation Council of Greater Los Angeles. He also created and led a spy operation that infiltrated numerous American Nazi groups in the 1930s and early 1940s. The Nazis referred to him as the most dangerous Jew in Los Angeles. Jonah Rose is based on Lewis's then-assistant, Joseph Roos. Roos was a journalist as well as an activist and spy, trained by Admiral George C. Marshall and his men. He was an executive director of the Community Relations Committee of the Jewish Federation Council of Greater Los Angeles and vice president of the American Jewish Congress. Like Lewis, he's best known for his anti-Nazi spying activities in the 1930s and 1940s, which resulted in the successful arrest, deportation, and prosecution of Nazis in the United States and the prevention of acts of sabotage, murder, and assassination. Lewis's and Roos's files from the 1930s and 1940s are also kept at the University Library at California State University, Northridge, and Roos's later files are at the University of Southern California. All the German and American Nazis are based on real people as well. Their names have been changed, except for Hermann Schwinn. Prologue. Los Angeles, California, June 14th, 1940.
Imagine, it's a year from now, 1941 or maybe even 42, and Germany and the Axis have won the war.
Hermann Schwinn was saying in a thick accent.
A long black limousine drives along the Pacific Coast Highway. Palm trees sway in the warm breeze, as sunlight glitters on the blue ocean.
Schwinn, a Frankfurt-born insurance salesman in his 40s, was a member of the Bund, a German-American organization established in 1936 as a successor to the Friends of New Germany. The Bund was comprised of only Americans of German descent, and its goal was to promote a favorable view of Nazi Germany and recruit new members. Schwinn was the Bund's Los Angeles regional commander. A naturalized American citizen, Schwinn was a devoted National Socialist, 5 feet 9 inches and slim as a knife,
a small mustache beneath his nose, a pipe stuck in his mouth at a jaunty angle. At his feet slept his dog, a large German shepherd, whose Finn bragged would attack any Jews in biting distance.
"The limo turns right onto a small dusty road," Schwinn continued, "lined with tall sycamore trees. It approaches large black iron gates, opened by armed guards in uniform. They give the Sieg Heil salute as the limo passes."
Schwinn was sitting at a corner booth in the restaurant at Deutsch's house, a German social club in downtown Los Angeles, and home to the Bund. The restaurant had a bar running the long length of the room. Dining tables covered in red checked cloths were piled high with the white-fleshed veal schnitzel, rich wursts, and sweet pastries German expats craved, accompanied by draft beer and dark coffee. The air was fragrant with the scent of hops and fried meat. Cigar and cigarette smoke curled up to the ceiling, covered in plaster swastikas. Along the walls ran hand-hammered bronze plates, flourished with the hooked cross. A man in the booth next to them was reading the Los Angeles Times. The headline declared, "Germans march into Paris, French are in full retreat." A black and white photograph showed Nazis raising the swastika flag. He continued,
"It follows a road winding through orchards and vegetable gardens. You can see red barns with horses and cows. The air smells of eucalyptus."
Across the table was another of the house's members, Wilhelm Wagner. Wagner was not impressed.
"How poetic," he said with a Viennese accent.
Wagner was the owner of the Continental Bookstore, screened German movies downtown, and was Schwinn's lieutenant.
"It was rumored he answered directly to Joseph Goebbels."
Wagner looked more like the Aryan ideal, taller and younger, tanned and well-muscled. His center-parted hair was so blonde it appeared almost white, and his eyes were an arresting silver. Schwinn took a swig of dark Bock beer and laughed.
"Well, this might please you then,"
he countered easily.
"Just out of view, there's a water storage tank, with its own water supply from springs, along with a double-generator power station and a 20,000-gallon fuel oil tank. Terraces have been leveled and planted with fruit trees, all supplied with copper pipes and a watering outlet for each tree. A culvert's been built for the stream, and there's a cold storage locker for storing food."
He beamed with pride.
"It's completely self-sustaining. Is that practical enough for you?"
Wagner grunted as an Oompa band began the stirring notes of the military parade song Bayerische Defiliermarsch. It was almost midnight. The regulars remained, drinking steins of beer and glasses of schnapps, celebrating the news of the fall of France. Hitler's triumphant taking of Paris was theirs to applaud, and the non-interference by the rest of Europe or America reassured them no one and nothing could stop the new Nazi world order. In a dark corner, two men in their 80s played Kriegsspiel, the Prussian version of chess.
"Like a military bunker?"
"Exactly,"
Schwinn exclaimed.
"Underneath, it's a bunker. We could fight a war, considering all the weapons we'll have stocked in the armory."
He frowned, annoyed to be thrown off.
"Where was I? Oh,
Yes.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?